and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gramling.
I'm Jenny Prentice.
I'm Connor Orr.
And guys, the sun is shining, the days are longer, everyone's heading out to the beach, it is summertime, and that means we all retreat into our homes and preview the divisions for the upcoming season. We're going to start this a little bit earlier this year. The thinking was being we probably want to devote a little more space to, sort of developing news once we get to August. So we're going to start the division preview series right now. There are eight divisions. We are beginning with the AFC North. We're not going to tell you how we determined to do AFC North first. We're just going to tell you we're doing it. And these are going to come at you in a fairly random way. You'll be surprised and delighted every week. But here's the deal. We're going to go through four categories for each division, dealing with biggest additions and most valuable non-quarterbacks and that sort of thing. We are going to have a coaches poll style vote at the end to see who is our pick to finish in each place in the division. And in the middle, I'm super excited about this. We're going to have a Mad Lib. We're going to have a division preview Mad Lib.
Very exciting. Connor Orr has taken the lead on the Mad Lib section. And I just have to say, Gary, we should probably make it into a little bit of a guessing game for listeners if they can figure out how we have ordered the divisions.
Boy, inviting people into our twisted minds to try and figure out how we did this. I don't know. That's dangerous. It's a dark place.
Hey, and we should also welcome everybody that's going to join us on YouTube for this.
Oh, like, yeah, we are.
See us now.
Yep.
And it's way harder for me when other people are talking to just read for pleasure, you know, so I can't do that anymore. I'm enjoying this, and welcome to our basements and living rooms and other respective areas. It's very exciting. I'm very disappointed that Gary used to sit against the backdrop of classic board games and has since decided to move it over. What is that, like Atlantic 10 poster
can
behind
I,
you?
No, that is Maryland basketball 2002. There's a UConn 1988 NIT champions, Clifford Robinson, the late, great Clifford Robinson. On there. So.
Wow. Yeah, I think we should be honest and share that Gary's background is not authentic. While this corner of his house may have previously existed, this is not where he usually records. He usually records in a somewhat dark basement, as Connor referenced, with a stack of reject board games behind him, which I enjoyed. I thought there was a lot of charm and appeal. Yes. I thought it was going to become a little bit of an interesting, you know, which board games were there, why were they rejected, a potential topic of conversation. However, Gary slyly upgraded, although I have to say, Connor has also done this. I am the only person that hasn't moved.
Well, because you have a lovely home.
Yeah.
Well, I also live in an apartment, so there really isn't much place for me to go. This is my main spot where I can sit.
So here's a little peek of Hollywood magic, right? I just took my laptop and turned it around. So normally you're facing the door, and now I'm facing the door. So
okay.
This is the back. This is what I look at when I'm typing downstairs, like the one time a year that I use my office. And so this is, I figured that would be the view that I'd want to bring the readers into.
Well, I think they both look great.
Viewers.
All of the above.
I also just rotated 15 minutes. That was all. Connor, at the end of the show, we should pick up our laptops and slowly rotate like a dramatic shot to show our old basements.
There's so much. I would get killed for this. There's just like trash everywhere, like in my office. You're seeing the nice part of it. So
please don't tell anyone how we live. All right, guys, let's get into the preview here. We're gonna do four questions, sort of questions we do for each division, and each of us will give our three answers, and then maybe trade barbs and shout at each other and be angry about what the other person answers. But the first category here, and we're gonna start with Jenny's answer. We'll call it biggest off-season edition, and this is the veteran edition. So there, it was addition with an A and then addition with an E. It's good podcasting right there. Jenny, biggest veteran offseason addition here.
All right. I went with John Johnson III, the safety that the Browns added their roster is really pretty solid across the board. The one area from last year that really could use fortifying was the secondary, and they did that. They got Johnson, who's a fantastic player, somehow flew a little under the radar, surprisingly so, yeah. Maybe because he was on a Rams team where there were so many other stars, and certainly is a player that the Rams would have liked to have kept, but you can't keep everybody, and especially because their roster has so many stars, you end up losing a player at a spot like safety. But I think he'll really be a big difference maker for the Browns secondary, shore up the back end, which had faced some injuries last year. That was part of the reason that was one of the weaker areas, but just a fantastic player, and I think, you know, if you look around the division, certainly one of the biggest additions, but maybe even one of the biggest best free agent signings across the league.
So I'm going with Kevin Zeitler in Baltimore here, and I don't think he is the best player added to the division, and I don't think he's anywhere near what Marshall Yanda was, even in Yanda's last season, even if you consider Yanda as maybe a half step below his Hall of Fame prime. But it was such a problem spot for the Ravens last year at right guard. I think just bring someone in who brings a, if I could be so rude to the guys who were there last year, kind of just like a level of competence to that spot, because I don't think the Ravens offensively slid back as much as people think. I think a lot of it had to do with some inefficiency in the red zone, but just bringing in Zeitler and being able to run the ball more effectively down there is, I think, going to make a big difference for them. And again, you know, you saw them, since they were injured up front, they tried to mix in some, to some degree of success, they mixed in some zone stuff with that scheme. I think they showed last year they can do a few different things with this rushing attack here, and they can still be based on that. You don't have to go out there and make Lamar Jackson a guy who throws the ball 70% of the time. So I think they can basically land somewhere between 2019 and 2020 as far as this offense goes with their performance. And I think Zeitler's a guy who is going to be able to solidify what they do up front here. And that's a big deal after they just couldn't replace Marshall Yanda last year.
So for that reason, I'm going with Jadeveon Clowney, because I think that Baltimore bolstering their running game means that Cleveland needs to get tougher against the run. And we'll get into a little bit of that when we talk about rookie additions, too, and why I think that's important. But it's really interesting. If you watch Baltimore's offense, there are a lot of times when Lamar Jackson's only option on plays is to give the ball on a lot of those zone read handoffs. There are a lot of times when there is no run option. Like, he has to give the ball, and their preference is for him to give the ball over and over and over again to set up the other things that they like to do. And so the first step in beating Baltimore is to confront them at that first kind of preference for their offense. And Jadeveon Clowney, I still think, plays the run better than most defensive ends in the league. And so he really is kind of a kryptonite for Baltimore. And then, you know, and played on that Titans defense that played them so well. But, you know, to kind of elevate that further, I mean, he can do for Myles Garrett's career what he did for J.J. Watt's career in Houston, too, which is to take on a lot of the difficult matchups, to draw a lot of the double teams, and then let the more athletic pass rusher, the guy who's going to get into the backfield faster, flourish. So I think that there's a chance for some pretty serious dominance there because he's in Cleveland.
All right, our next category here. This is the biggest off-season edition, rookie edition. And this is more like, I'm gonna slightly rebrand this as most intriguing rookie edition here in the division, because, I don't know, I mean, I think we all would probably go Ja'Marr Chase as far as a guy who's going to have the biggest impact, but I think there are some guys who are certainly more intriguing in what they're going to bring. And if you guys don't mind, I'm going to go first this time.
Excellent.
Do it, Gary.
So I'm going to anger everyone. I'm going to pick Najee Harris, the Steelers running back. I think there's two things that are somewhat important that he's going to bring this Pittsburgh offense. One is just something to regulate them. I think that's what you saw in the second half of last season, is, you know, they had run out this sort of new look, all the motion, all the horizontal stuff in the passing game, and it sort of caught teams off guard, and it just didn't. It got stale. Everyone knew it was coming by the second half of the season, and they just didn't have anything to turn to, and it was just a really disjointed offense. And on top of that, they've never been, you know, Ben's never been a big play action guy. They've never really used a whole lot of that. So I think having a guy like Harris who can grind you out those 5 yards on first down and basically keep you ahead of the chains, I think that is a big deal. But also, my big thing, and I am, I don't know, I'm going to become the champion of running backs everywhere here. I like running backs who can finish drives, who can score in the red zone. I think that's one of the most important skills for running back. If I was gonna put together my wish list, I want a guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield and I can move around the formation. But secondly, I would want a guy who can get the ball into the end zone. And you did see late last year the Steelers had some issues in short yardage. I think Harris makes a difference there, and I don't want to go so far as to celebrate a first-round pick on a running back, but I think this one makes some sense, makes a good amount of sense, makes a serviceable amount of sense.
Your opinion was so mainstream that it actually fits into your penchant for being an outsider because it was so mainstream that it is almost against the mainstream. And so it was really the perfect Gary answer. I was initially expecting you to say like Ben Cleveland or something, but this makes more sense. And viewers are going to have to kind of give it a second, let it turn in your mind, and eventually it will become so wild that it will fit perfectly into Gary's whole milieu, you know?
It's very hipster. It was a very hipster answer.
It is, yeah. I'm telling you, I'm not joking about this. Old takes expose me. Running backs are going to be a thing again. Like, we're going to be talking about running backs again a lot, big time.
I like that. I'll get on board with that.
The non-ironic selection of the running back.
It's so non-ironic that it's ironic.
Yes.
Is where we landed with it.
Yes.
I personally like Jenny's answer the best, which is par for the course. But
Jenny, you go ahead.
Well, I also had a little bit of an advantage because I filled out the Google Doc first. So I think my answers were probably the most obvious ones. So I went with Rashad Bateman for the biggest offseason edition rookie category. Clearly, we knew the Ravens were in need of upgrading their receiving core. Bateman was one of multiple additions they made. Sammy Watkins in free agency. They also took Tylan Wallace later in the draft. But as Gary set up so well, probably, yes, Chase may be the receiver that puts up the biggest numbers or one of the flashiest offseason additions rookies in the AFC North. But Bateman could have a chance to be a really big difference maker and to get that offense a little bit more over the hump. And I agree with you, Gary. I don't think last year was as much of a regression as it was made it out to be, which is why a player like Bateman and Zeitler and some of the other additions they've made can serve to push the Ravens forward a little bit, which can make a big difference. So I'm interested to see. He was the fifth receiver taken, and obviously DeCosta's pre-draft comments where, oh, well, receiver's not a position we need to upgrade, or however he phrased it, were a tell that they were going this direction. But, you know, we already knew that anyway.
I like that answer a lot. I went with Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa from Cleveland, but also just added sneakily into the Google Doc Tony Fields the second, just as a package, right? Because I think that there was a definite belief in, I think that the Browns had that that healthy disagreement, I think, during the pre-draft process, where I think that there was probably some linebacker guys in there, and there was probably some defensive back guys in there that that thought that we should, you know, we need to continue shoring up the secondary. And there were some other people that, you know, when you think about it, it's like, okay, it's sort of a dated thought process, but it's not really. If you look at the AFC North, it's just a different division. You need different players, you need different kinds of guys, and I think that JOK helps them because, you know, the Steelers are very tight end oriented, the Ravens are very tight end oriented. That solves some of your problems there, but he can also step up in the box and hit people. He had a lot of, you know, kind of these eye-popping hits at Notre Dame that blew a lot of people out of the water. And Tony Fields, too, is a tougher guy that can kind of just fit into these gaps and stop these run-first offenses. And I think that was something that, as much as we were talking about Cleveland's secondary desperately needing to get overhauled, I think they needed those guys in the middle, too, because Jenny has pointed out so well over the last few weeks, like, look at the way that teams are behaving now that Tampa Bay's won the Super Bowl with off-ball linebackers. You know, mm-hmm. they're just like running backs. They're back in vogue a little bit, and they're realizing it, like, okay, all these other teams are either going to do what Baltimore's doing, what the Steelers have done, or, you know, what the 49ers, the Jets are trying to do. It's all downhill. It's all very physical. And, I mean, the Buccaneers ran duo, like a basic, you know, two-back running play all through the playoffs because teams weren't tough enough in the middle to handle it. And so I think that these two players go a long way towards fixing that problem, or at least shoring them up a little bit.
So we are going to touch on the quarterbacks in the reveal of our vote at the end of the show. But let's do most valuable non-quarterback in the division here, and let's let Connor go first this time.
I did the Gary answer this time, so you know, I can't believe it. So I'm going to be pedantic here, and I'm going to underline the word value, right? Most valuable player is a player that does things that other players in the league don't do with as much regularity. And so Mark Andrews, the tight end from the Ravens, is probably one of four or five tight ends in the league that can block as well as he blocks and receive as well as he receives. It's, you know, probably Mark Andrews, George Kittle, you know, Travis Kelce. It's a very short list, Dallas Goedert. You know, it's a very, very short list of guys that are able to do that stuff so well. And I think the more that you look around the league, you see who's getting paid and for what reasons they're getting paid, teams are realizing, holy smokes, we're out of these players. There's not a ton of these guys left. And Mark Andrews is one of those guys. And I think without him, we see a very different Ravens offense.
You know what I like about Mark Andrews is, like, he was another one of these tight ends who came into the league with this reputation of, like, oh, well, he's just a big receiver. He can't block. Like, you can't ask him to block. And he does it now. So I am going to, treat him like he's a small child and just say, that's really impressive that you made
good
what
you.
Was a weakness into a strength. So I salute you, Mark Andrews, and you can wear that badge around and be proud of it. But it's not unlike what Travis Kelce was. He sort of came in with the same reputation, and he had issues as a rookie. They really they ran to the other side of the formation when he was in the game, and now they run behind him, and Mark Andrews kind of done the same thing. So good on you. I'll go second, Jenny, and you can go third here.
Sounds good.
I'm going Myles Garrett, and look, Myles Garrett might have been Defensive Player of the Year last year if he hadn't missed a little bit of time. What is really interesting to me about Myles Garrett is there's no doubt. I mean, look, the question is he an A player or an A-plus player? Like, he's Defensive Player of the Year, or is he just a really, really, really good All-Pro player year in and year out? I thought he picked on some really, really bad tackles early in the year, and that's part of what you do as a good defensive coordinator. You know, Joe Woods makes sure that Myles Garrett gets those matchups, but I mean, he feasted against the backups early in the year, which I think maybe gave him a little more of a boost. I think he was maybe a half step behind TJ Watt and some of the other, you know, Aaron Donald, some of the other really top guys, but if he is a true sort of just bona fide Defensive Player of the Year candidate, and now you put Clowney on the line with him, and that's going to be even more single blocking that he's going to be facing. I mean, you could be talking about 18 sacks this year for Myles Garrett.
Well, once again, Gary has set up my pick nicely, which is TJ Watt. I think what's interesting about Watt is he has still not maybe fully gotten the recognition that he deserves. He was the Defensive Player of the Year candidate last year, yes, and he finished in second place. But I think we haven't seen him fully emerge from his older brother's shadow yet, although I do think last season was kind of that point where kind of we saw a shift from the focus on JJ to TJ a little bit more. And he's headed into his fifth season, so he's still growing and developing as a player, but obviously a disruptive force and really key to the Steelers being a contender in the division, because there's so much uncertainty about what will happen on offense. You know, Ben Roethlisberger is obviously at the tail end of his career. He lost his center. They have a new offensive coordinator. So they're really going to have to rely on their defense this season to be a factor. One thing I am interested to see is how they fully transition away from having Bud Dupree. That happened, you know, quickly. There was a sudden change last season, right, when he tore his ACL. And we saw that the defense, the front, wasn't quite as productive without Dupree in the lineup. Now he's gone. He's gone to Tennessee. So they have an offseason to adjust. But I am interested to see, okay, now that Bud Dupree is out of the lineup and they're planning for that to happen, perhaps the adjustment will be a little bit better this season without him as a piece in there. And it's also a contract year for TJ Watt, which will be another interesting factor. He declined to talk about it at Steelers minicamp, but obviously is a player that the Steelers would like to keep around.
Jenny obviously did that awesome cover story on TJ Watt last year in the Art of the Turnover. Based on what you know, reading the tea leaves, which I was banned from saying, but I will bring it back because I want to read some tea leaves. Do you think that we're like one contract year away from a Watt Brothers reunion somewhere? Like we need, well, it's not a reunion because I don't think they've ever played together, but like a real Watt-tacular finale or something like that.
They've spent time together. Yeah.
Yeah, they know each other. Yeah. They have the Subway in their backyard that mm-hmm. they all eat at.
That's mm-hmm. right. That's right. Yeah, I mean, that was the potential possibility this offseason, right? And it didn't work out that way, but I can imagine that would be a career goal.
If you're, we all have siblings here. Like if your sibling was playing for the Steelers and you were a free agent, would you want to play for the Steelers? Or would you want, you know, like, I don't know. And I mean, I love my sister. I just don't know if like I'd want to like bookend a defensive line with her. That's all. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I am the younger sibling. My sister is brilliant and I had the same major as she did in college. And I still remember going into my biochemistry class freshman year, pretty big lecture hall, like at least 100 students sitting like in the middle of the room. And the professor points to me and is like, are you related to Kathy Vrentis? And I was like, yes, I'm her sister. And he said, well, you have big shoes to fill. And I was like, Whoa. Yes, I'm aware. I've been told this my whole life. And he said, well, sounds like it's an issue for you, but I just want you to know that she's the only person to receive 100% on all four exams in my class. It was one of those classes where your grade was based entirely on four exams. And this teacher was one of those who had the tricky multiple choice questions. So it was like A, B, C, and then D was like A and B, and then E was like A and C. So you had to know every last thing. So I think I took the first exam and I think I got one question wrong or something. And I go to, you know, check my test score, pick it up. Cause you know, this was a while ago. I'm older. You didn't always get your grades via email then. And he was like, well, you know, nice try or something along those lines. So I can relate to TJ a little bit here.
So you would prefer, like, let's say Kathy is a franchise quarterback. You're the pass rushing defensive end. Maybe being able to get after and practice a little bit would be cathartic.
Oh, no. I was saying, you know, maybe I should have gone with a different major or a different university or something along those lines.
You shouldn't have been in football at all is what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yeah.
If Jenny is JJ Watt, she's going to go somewhere and convert to punter. Oh, man. Most interesting head coach. Most interesting coach, head or assistant. Mm-hmm. I can't even read the category that I've wrote myself. This is most interesting coach. It can be a head coach or an assistant coach in the division. I'll go first on this one just to break it up a little bit and to sort of introduce the Bengals into the conversation here for just a moment.
Nice.
Zach Taylor is just, I don't know, in a way, it's probably not great to be the head coach in Cincinnati, where maybe you don't have the same resources, maybe you don't have the same investment that you'll get in some other franchises. But by the same token, maybe it's nice to be in Cincinnati because it just feels like there's not a ton of pressure. Maybe I'm misreading this. I just feel like there's not a ton of heat on Zach Taylor there. Everyone's kind of looking at this team and being like, okay, well, they're the Bengals. They'll finish fourth place again, and let's just see if they make a little bit of progress. And if they, I think this team is capable of maybe stealing 9 wins this season or something like that. But it seems like if they, even if they go 5-12, it'll just be like, that's where we're supposed to be. We're the Bengals, and this is where we belong, type of thing. But I will say I'm really interested to see what happens with this offense, because they did fortify the offensive line a little bit. Obviously they bring in Ja'Marr Chase Ja'Marr Chase is going to, AJ Green had a great career, but he just didn't have a very good 2020. So you get a big upgrade in Ja'Marr Chase. Joe Burrow last year, I'm surprised the Bengals offensive line kind of graded out as well as it did, because I thought when Joe Burrow was in there, it was just a guy who had zero trust in his blocking, and there was never a top of his drop. He just took the snap and it was immediately into scramble mode, and that's how they just kind of played all season. So it's you have a young potential franchise quarterback. You have a decent supporting cast. Maybe the defense is still a question mark, but I don't know. Maybe Zach Taylor and this group kind of sneaks up on people this year and steals a couple wins from 3 teams that I think we all are looking at as being certainly not on the Chiefs level, but possibly in that tier 2 of AFC teams.
Interesting, Gary. All right, I went with a non-head coach. I went with the new Steelers offensive coordinator, Matt Canada. And the reason is partly, I referenced it in my last answer, there have been some changes and also some non-changes for the Steelers offense. Ben Roethlisberger loses his longtime starting center, Marquise Pouncey. And Matt Canada has said he will continue to do what Ben Roethlisberger wants to do with the offense. So I think what I'm most intrigued about is, how is this going to work? You have a new offensive coordinator coming in who's supposed to bring new ideas, but you have a long entrenched veteran quarterback that's probably not super amenable to new ideas. So do we see Matt Canada have the chance to run the offense he would like to run? Is this a weird, awkward transition period? How do they deal with the fact that they're running a new offense without an experienced center that Roethlisberger has worked with for so many years? So I think there's a lot of questions about the Steelers offense overall. Obviously, Najee Harris, Gary talked about earlier in the show. So I just don't know what's going to happen with the Steelers offense. And I think the switch in the offensive coordinator adds an interesting wild card.
I love that answer. And, because Matt Canada is a really interesting guy, right? He had a lot of success in college. And everybody who wants like a good instructive look at Matt Canada, go back to the year that the Rams made the Super Bowl. All that backfield motion stuff, that jet motion stuff in the backfield, that was stolen from Matt Canada. That was the guy that was doing it before everybody else. And so he's got some really interesting ideas. I think, it's too simplistic to say he'll just bring that to Pittsburgh, but there's a lot of great athletes on that Steelers offense that could theoretically do a lot of that stuff and make them a little bit tougher to defend at the line. So I think that's a great answer. I did a little bit of a cop out here with Kevin Stefanski, and I'll just say this, just because he's the only new head coach, I believe, to make the playoffs last year. The only first-time head coach. Ron Rivera also made the playoffs, and I guess he was technically a new head coach, but only first-time head coach to make the playoffs last year during a pandemic. And I think in a lot of ways, like, it's just like a sky's the limit thing with this guy. It feels like as well as they were and as prepared as they were last year coming into the season, despite not having anything in the offseason, now that they have all these chances to get together to meet, I don't know, like what else could he do and how kind of high could he take this, the ceiling of this? This Browns team is loaded, as Jenny said earlier. They have a coach of the year. They have Bill Callahan, who a lot of people, is probably next to your head coach, your offensive line coach, might be one of the most important people on your staff. And so they have a lot of really good things going for them. And it was, it's just, they're together with the GM and the, there's no infighting. It's just like, this team could win the Super Bowl. I think that they have as good a chance as anybody of going to the Super Bowl and winning it this year. Is that crazy?
Connor, that is a bold prediction that you just kind of dropped in. I wasn't prepared for it.
I wasn't either. It just came out.
Just came out?
Yeah.
Connor Orr, Browns to the Super Bowl.
Some people meditate for years to find that kind of subconscious clarity. And here I am just blurting it out on the Monday morning podcast. But yeah, no, it's just... like I was talking myself into it, you know, while I'm just blabbering here. And then I was just like, wow, they could win the Super Bowl.
And you got fired up as you were going on all of the pros, all of the reasons their roster is strong, the coaching staff is strong, and you felt confident enough to share it, Connor. I really appreciate being here for this moment.
Please clip this for social so I look like a ridiculous when they're 3-4 in October. That's the goal of all of this. Bring down the Oracle.
Listen, a lot of good teams start 3-4.
And true. You have 17 games. Now you have 10 games to recover here, Connor.
Very true. All right, so I'm going to spearhead the Mad Libs portion of this, and it's good to get this out of the way early because I volunteered to write the Mad Libs, and I was very excited about doing divisional Mad Libs, and I came to realize that I didn't exactly know how Mad Libs worked, and but it clicked for me like right at about minute 20 of the show, and so I think I'm ready to go, but I do have it here, so all right, so... The first thing I want you, so I'm gonna write these down, and you guys will just give me your answers. Can you give me a noun, and it's got to be the name of a woodland type creature? It's that creature you'd find in the woods.
Jenny, do you want to go first, and then I'll go second. We'll alternate.
Chipmunk.
Oh, this is gonna be great. Okay, chipmunk. Perfect. Gary, go ahead.
Oh, I need to give you one too. Okay.
Are the two of you just go one and then the other, and then we'll see what we come up with? That probably works better, right?
Yeah, I think one and then yeah. Because otherwise, you have to give like a slash on each one. You really want to flow when it's all
you
said
do.
And done.
You're right. You're right. Again, just
no, it's
highlighting
fine.
My misunderstanding of Mad Libs.
I was gonna say you volunteered, and we were so pumped about it, and it turns out you don't even know what it is.
It's like when I went over to my friend's house to play. Magic the Gathering, and I talked about it all day in school, and then I was like, okay, so how do we do this? And I was like, you don't know how to play? No. All right. So
frantically looking at the Wikipedia page for Mad Libs. Yes, go ahead, Connor.
Gary, I'm gonna need an adjective that you would use to describe a slightly eyebrow-raising outfit on the red carpet, and not in a good way.
Oh, I think that would be... How about salacious?
Perfect. All right, that works. Writing this down. That was not a trap to get you to say salacious, by the way.
But I bet it feels like it.
Yeah, I bet it feels like it. Okay, Jenny, I'm going to need a noun that you would use to describe a large dog.
A noun to describe a large dog?
Or an adjective, I'm
oh,
sorry.
Oh, an adjective.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, yeah. Just bear with me here.
All right. Lumbering?
This is great. Okay. All right.
I guess lumbering works as an adjective, yeah.
Yeah. They. This is going to work out. Okay. Gary, I'm going to need a verb describing kind of a fun... dance that you would do at a wedding?
I would say a robot. The dance robot, not the noun robot.
Dance robot is what you're answering.
Yeah, well, robot, yeah. But you know, it's meant as the verb. It's a verb. It's a dance verb.
Do the robot.
Yes, correct.
Do the robot. Okay. Yep. And then Jenny, a noun describing something in the bathroom that isn't the toilet.
Okay.
That's a very Family Feud question right there.
It is.
Sure is. Faucet.
All right. All right, so we got it. All right. So this is actually going directly into Sports Illustrated, the magazine, the divisional preview issue. So copywriters, just get ready. When you look at the AFC North, this division is a real chipmunk. You have the Cleveland Browns, a team that has typically been salacious. Last year, they defeated the Pittsburgh Steelers in a playoff game that some may describe as lumbering. Meanwhile, the Ravens fizzled in the playoffs due to their inability to do the robot. Lastly, the Cincinnati Bengals finished in the division's faucet.
Wow. All right.
That was oh, that was exactly as wonderful and stupid as I thought it would be.
Excellent work.
Oh man.
I was thinking of I was writing it as me, you know, and so I was trying to, and then I realized that I wasn't going to give any of the answers, and oh, that turned out better than I thought. Faucet was the kicker for me. I love that.
Yes. That's a new term. We got to use that throughout the season.
The old divisional faucet.
The divisional faucet. This harkens back to playing Mad Libs while waiting between events at swim meets.
Ooh.
We always had a pad and, one of those little books, and then somebody would,
Which, by
activity.
The way, you should have told your professor, as much as impressive as that 100% on the test score was, is Jenny's sister still in the record books in State College PA for various swimming records.
Right.
Name is still up there. You
right.
know?
There you go, Connor.
So what do you value, Mr. Professor? You know? Just saying.
Thanks, Connor. I appreciate the ego boost after I bear that embarrassing anecdote.
Anytime.
All right. This is the wrap-up part of the show. We unveil our, I'm calling it a coaches poll, and I'll stick with that. The three of us voted our order of finish in the AFC, AFC North, and I will now unveil it with number four, the Cincinnati Bengals, total of 3 points. We each picked them to finish fourth, and I think it's a team that's moving forward. They're just, I don't think there's any reason to think that they move forward enough to catch anyone else in this division.
I agree with that. I think, too, that if you listen to the conversation surrounding, my dog agrees with me, that if you listen to the conversation surrounding the team, you can often tell what the coach has convinced important people of around mm-hmm. him. And any time you listen to anybody connected to the Bengals talking, it's, well, you know, it's going to take some work, and the roster was really bad before we got here, you know. And so I think that leads me to believe that even probably deep down, the Bengals think that, you know, they're probably going to be a 5-win team this year.
And they're in one of the most competitive divisions in the NFL, if not the most.
Yeah, no doubt.
So we have a tie for second with 8 points. That would be the we'll do the Steelers first. We'll do reverse alphabetical. Steelers second place. I voted the Steelers first place. I think I think they learned some difficult lessons last year with this offense. I think they'll get that sorted out. I do think Matt Canada will find some answers for them, and I think the defense is going to be good enough. So I pick the Steelers to win the division.
What?
Yeah.
Connor and I, both had the Steelers third, so.
Yeah. Spoiling the Browns' Super Bowl run when it's all said and done. But yeah, the Browns are our tied for second here with 8 points as well. Connor picked them second. I picked them third. I disrespected them, and I will live with that.
I mean, it's the safe bet cosmically, right? I mean, it's, you know, to have Pittsburgh in first and Cleveland in third. I mean, that's, you know, if you're reading the stars, that's the easiest way to go. But I was really left with no choice after that monologue back there. So I'm all in now. Yeah. So I'm in the deep end, and I'm prepared to swim.
Where do we put Baker Mayfield, right? There's going to be a do they or don't they long-term deal for Baker Mayfield. I mean, I think even in October last year, I was kind of leaning towards they probably have to move on. But I think you do it now. I think you figure out the long-term deal with him. I thought it was really good in the second half of the year.
I feel like you do it to stop him from being pissed, but you build in a bunch of stuff where you could get out of it pretty quickly, right? I think that the Browns probably, and I'm not saying that they're thinking this, but I'm sure as a front office, would be the least married to the idea of having a franchise quarterback over the long term. You know, I think that they could probably take it or leave it. And, you know, but if he performs well this year, of course you pay him, absolutely.
first place. Our pick to win the division is the Baltimore Ravens. Jenny had them first. Connor and I each had them second. And yeah, I don't. That's plenty of reason to think that this is going to play out that way.
Yeah, I think with the additions to the offense, filling in some of the weaknesses last season, right? They really addressed those with adding Zeitler and adding receivers, and I think they'll just be, as we discussed, that little margin better that they needed on offense, and I think they have the best quarterback in the division.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
They definitely have the best quarterback in the division. I think that's true. I like it. I'm never going to say it's a bad thing to have a bird team win the division.
That's right. You know, as we've made the transition from the Weak Side podcast, Connor, we have kept some of our favorite things, notably the 2011 Jets. And I really hope we can keep the ornithological references as well. That's really a key part of our identity. So it is fitting that in our first division rankings this summer, we have a bird team in first place.
I'm gonna have them Photoshop like a little bird right here, you know, just like a little CGI bird.
CGI,
you know?
Bird.
Yeah,
I like
it. It'll say like, "Let's wrap it up, Gary." You know,
perfect.
Well, on that note, let's wrap it up. Yeah. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Rentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gremling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer for podcasts is Scott Brody. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB, and Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. We'll be right back.